Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on American Family Radio, live radio show right here for the next hour and 25 minutes. And I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Is it a good morning? I'm looking at the headlines here. Well, I'm not sure it is.
Well, no, I think if you look in the headlines, just start off your day and ask yourself, is it a good morning or not? Nine times out of ten, you're going to get a big fat no.
That's right. You better look in the Bible first.
Right.
How's that for spiritual?
Although the stock market's been going up, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Good economic reports here.
Really?
Yes. Private payrolls surged by 275,000 jobs. I mean, there's some good economic news. It's everything else.
Yes. Is Bernie Sanders happy today?
Of course not.
Does Bernie Sanders... If you look up curmudgeon in the dictionary, would you see Bernie Sanders' picture in there?
Who was it we were talking? We were talking to someone. Maybe it was you who said something about it in a meeting we had. That Bernie Sanders is the guy at every family dinner and cookout and party that always wants to turn the conversation to. I want to talk. Let's talk about about paying your fair share of taxes.
Yeah.
Uncle Bernie, I just want you to pass the mustard.
I'll pass the mustard.
Is that your first share of mustard? I'm gonna nail that down.
You are close, my friend.
That is really good.
Fred Jackson,
yes.
With us, Fred. Don't you?
All he has to do is dye his hair gray.
If
Ed's
Ed
off to the races.
If Bernie Sanders gets to be president, God, I will say this. God forbid.
Yes.
That Ed wants to move on from his gig here.
Yep. Right.
That's right.
He's late night TV, Bernie Sanders impersonator.
Right? And Frank, to your point, Fred, I don't really need a whole lot of, I'm close to not needing to dye my hair. It's getting close to gray.
So. Oh, me.
I'm going to work on it.
Being Bernie Sanders needs never having to comb your hair.
With a balloon.
I can't give that up, ladies and gentlemen. And please, I understand you can't say that about a woman. But a man you can just beat to a pulp about his
that's right.
Lack of personal
fashion
care about it, what he looks like.
Mm.
I'm talking about comb your hair, man. That's all I'm saying is comb your hair.
Well, I saw a funny – somebody said he combs his hair with a balloon. Get the static.
This from a man – I just tell you, I don't even have to comb mine. I just get out of the dryer, hit it a couple times – and it's dry by the time I walk out of the shower, huh?
Yep.
All right. A lot to talk about on the program today. We appreciate you listening. A couple things. If you want to watch and or listen on the internet to our show here, you can go to Facebook or YouTube and just type in Today's Issues, and we live video stream there. And you can interact with other listeners, and we will be posting the stories that we talk about. So just go to Facebook or YouTube and type in Today's Issues. Also, if you just want to send us an old-fashioned email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. All right, Fred, what's happening?
Well, prayers for the families affected by this shooting at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, late yesterday afternoon. A student has been arrested and opened fire. The headline this morning, they don't know why, but when it was over, two people were dead. Three people are still clinging to life at this hour, and one with non-life-threatening injuries. And that's about, folks, all we know at this point. As I say, no one can figure out why this young man, a student on that campus, opened fire yesterday. No indication. No letters in advance, nothing of that nature. But we certainly do want to pray for those families that have been affected by that. It just happens much too often.
Was that on campus?
It was on campus at the Charlotte campus.
And the shooter has been identified as, Fred, you mentioned, 22-year-old. His name is Tristan Andrew Terrell.
Mm-hmm.
Charged with two counts of murder, four counts of attempted murder.
That's You have millions, 320 million people in this country. Of course, you have minors who are can't own a gun. Mm-hmm. Well, they can own a gun, but they can't. I don't know what I'm talking about there. What I'm saying is there are millions of guns and millions of people, and the fact that this kind of thing happens so rarely mm-hmm. is
my understanding is it's actually going down too. Multiple homicides over
they
the
all
last
make national
30
news.
Years.
They're,
yeah,
they're going to make national news. What reason I'm saying this is you're going to get, you know, this will probably happen next week somewhere in our country. It's a big country. Some sadly, mm-hmm. somebody will go, you know, crazy and shoot a few people or whatever like that. And then the news media will come on and they'll say, "Oh, we need gun control. This is crazy. It's last week. It's this week. It's and one is terrible.
Right.
One is a tragedy. One mm-hmm. incident like this, what you're citing at University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. But I'm just saying to you, you have to keep things in proportion and in perspective when you're talking about these kinds of incidents.
It's a tragedy when Chicago has people
every
killed
weekend.
Every weekend. I mean, you know, it's murder is is a tragedy when someone's.
But I'm just saying, you got millions of guns and millions of people, and this kind of thing does not happen that often, relatively speaking, to the numbers I just presented. But anyway,
it's kind of interesting in the story we posted on One News Now. The suspect, Terrell, his name, had, according to people who know him, he has never shown any interest in guns or any other weapons. So they're totally shocked. I mean, he doesn't have a collection of guns.
Right.
No indication that he was upset with anybody.
Right.
He moved there from the Dallas area a couple of years ago. So that's all we know at this point. It's very sad.
Next story.
Well, the big news today, the political news today, is that the Attorney General, William Barr, back about 40 minutes ago, took a seat at the Senate Judiciary Committee. And, of course, he is being asked about what has transpired in the days since Bob Mueller issued his 400-page report. The Attorney General, Barr, put out a 3-4-page summary of that, and the Democrats have been trying to make hay with that ever since. In that summary, everybody knows, I think, by now, Robert Mueller said there was no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. However, he said they also investigated the idea that the president, Trump, tried to obstruct the investigation.
Obstruct what?
The investigation.
Oh.
All right, into possible Russian collusion. It was very interesting this morning. Now, you may have seen the headlines in the last 24 hours. The headlines being, and it stemmed from a Washington Post story, that Robert Mueller wrote a letter to the Attorney General William Barr after he released that short summary. That the reports are that he wasn't happy with Barr's conclusion in that summary. William Barr outlined the sequence. After he received that letter from Mueller, first of all, Mueller did not complain about Barr's conclusions in that short 3 or 4 pages. According to what the Attorney General said this morning, Mueller was more upset with how the media was covering what Barr had said in that summary. But the Attorney General said something interesting. Excuse me. The Attorney General said he was surprised when he read the 400-page report from Mueller that after all of these 2 years, months of investigating, that Mueller had decided not to come to any conclusions about indicting the president for obstruction of justice. Barr went to great lengths this morning saying that's the job. You're supposed to, after all of these investigations, because we know Mueller indicted a whole bunch of people.
Right.
But he chose not to. So the Attorney General William Barr says that put it on us that we had to make a decision. So he sat down with the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, and they looked at this, and they came to the conclusion there was not enough evidence to issue a charge of obstruction of justice against the president. So that's how it unfolded. And so he's been very clear in his opening testimony this morning to go through the sequence of events. But I found it very interesting that he was shocked that Mueller, while raising questions about alleged obstruction by the president into the investigation, which in itself is hard to believe because, for instance, the president never issued an executive privilege in any of this. He let Mueller investigate for 2 years.
Right.
Can
I ask you something?
Sure, go ahead.
Now, my understanding was, and maybe this is a question for Abraham Hamilton III, he'll be on at 10:30, mm-hmm. but my understanding is that it's not the job of the special counsel to prosecute anyone.
No.
They're the ones who gather the evidence, mm-hmm. and then they make a suggestion. If they think the evidence warrants, they suggest that the Attorney General prosecute. That
yes.
It's again, I joke about
well, there's
law
somebody
and order.
Prosecute. There were other, excuse me for interrupting, but there were other branches of federal, of the FBI, not the FBI, but U.S. Attorney's offices that went after people like Manafort and Cohen and others, based on the recommendations of the special counsel's findings, but he didn't prosecute them himself.
Right. That's my understanding. And that those individuals were prosecuted because in the course of being questioned, apparently some of them allegedly lied to the FBI and those kinds of things.
So I
guess what I'm getting at is that Bob Mueller. Robert Mueller, the special counsel, it seems to me, if he's upset with the Attorney General Barr, it's only because he apparently did not think there was evidence for prosecution for obstruction, or he was too cowardly to say so.
Yes.
And now he wants William Barr to do the dirty work.
Yeah.
You be the one who's going to go out on a limb and possibly fail rather than Barr prosecuting and then saying, well, I'm just using the evidence that Mueller gave me, and if it fails, it's his fault.
To your point about what Mueller's obligation was, remember during the last couple of years, we had a number of news conferences with Rod Rosenstein where they announced charges against Russians and that sort
right.
of thing based on the recommendations of Bob Mueller.
Right.
So Mueller did have the statutory right to recommend charges. We've come to this conclusion, these guys should be charged. He did not do that with the president. He did conclude there was no collusion. He laid out some, 10 different instances which one might come to the conclusion of obstruction, but I'm not going
to
say it is.
It's either, to me, it's either obstruction or it isn't. If President Trump goes to Bob Mueller or anybody else and says, hey, you know, who was the Flynn? General Flynn. He's a nice guy. I don't think he did anything wrong. I want you to keep that in mind or whatever. That's either obstruction or it isn't. I mean, either the law says...
Was that one of the ones they cited? Examples?
I don't know if it's one of the ones they cited, but that is one of the ones that's been kicked around for the last 2 years. That's not obstruction. If it's obstruction, yeah. The law spells out what obstruction is.
This is just Democrats still whining and crying because Robert Mueller didn't nail President Trump, and they want to keep it up. And, you know...
And they want to imply that Barr is doing something wrong.
Yeah.
That's why they're questioning him.
Yeah.
Because they, as we probably will mention, only two members of Congress have taken the Attorney General's offer to go and read the Mueller report, unredacted.
Right. The unredacted.
They don't care what's in that.
No, they don't care. Let's move on before we lose more people. you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Tagliano and Fred Jackson. I am looking forward to watching the clips from the highlights from today's hearing because I like Attorney General Barr. I like the way he handles himself before Congress, you know, because he's like unflappable. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
He just not, you know, he's just really good. He's been Attorney General before. He was Attorney General under George W. Bush. So anyway, I'm looking forward to watching. He can hold his own.
Yeah.
And give it back. He can give some back too. I like the way he told the House of Representatives. Was it Elijah Cummings? Mm. Whoever's the chairman of that committee, the Democrats. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was a different committee. Anyway, they wanted to. They told Attorney General Barr, "You come, and you know, us congressmen, we got a card game going on, but we're going to send our lawyers to question you about all this stuff related to the Mueller report."
Yeah, that was Gerald Nadler.
Was that Nadler?
Yes.
So he told Nadler, in the words of George W. Bush, "Not gonna do it." So, yeah. So he said, "No, I'm not doing that."
Right.
If you, sir, Mr. Congressman, duly elected representative of the people, and your colleagues want to question me, I'll come answer your questions and be happy to comply. But I'm not going to go sit in a room and you send your lawyers to
question. Because I'm not on trial.
Right. Send your lawyer. I don't have to come.
Right.
If you want to send your lawyers to question me while you go play cards or go, huh?
Yeah.
Or go fishing or go down to Starbucks, I'm not doing it.
Right.
So I'm glad he told them that. So anyway, we'll see what happens with this. Next story, Fred.
All right. Well, yesterday, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Fred, I was having a pretty good day right there.
Right there.
It's 10:21 Central Time.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 10:22. I'd gone probably 24 hours without hearing that name.
Nancy or Chuck?
Yeah, that one.
That one.
That one. Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
And
the name that shall not be named.
You had to bring her
that,
name up.
That woman who is House Speaker.
Okay. I can deal with that.
You
at least wait
that.
Till middle afternoon.
And Senate Minority
NP.
Leader Chuck
Just
Schumer.
Go NP. Anyway, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
They had a get-together with President Trump yesterday. Now, the first time they got together, that one did not go well at all. But yesterday, House Speaker and Chuck Schumer, they come to the microphone after meeting with the president, and it was, oh, we had a wonderful meeting with the president. Everything, oh, my goodness. They're talking about...
Wait a minute. You talking about... So yesterday... You're talking about Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the House, and the Democrat leader of the Senate, Chuck, you call Chucky, I guess, Schumer,
mm-hmm.
went to the White House
mm-hmm.
to meet with the president.
That's correct.
About the infrastructure bill.
Yes.
Now, I got to ask you, I didn't see the photo. I saw the one from a few months back. Was Vice President Pence there yesterday?
I'm not sure. We
Have
didn't
you seen
see
the picture?
We didn't see inside the meeting.
Because, you know, last time.
Yes.
When they were meeting about ending the
that was about it was about the government shutdown.
Government shutdown,
yes.
And it was Schumer, Pelosi, Trump, and Pence.
I know, what
and
you're
it was hilarious.
Say.
The picture was hilarious. The body language, because you got Trump doing his thing right there, you know, with his hands, right,
leaning forward.
He leaning forward with his hands, holding court.
Yeah,
whether you want him to or not, you know, and then. And we got Pelosi, Schumer sort of sitting there like, I can't believe I'm in this, you know, I can't believe listening to this guy. I've listened to him my whole life because they're both New Yorkers. Then you got Pelosi over there like, you know, with her wide eyes. And then you got Pence recoiling. His back's pinned to the back of the chair. He's like, we don't.
He had like
do
his legs together and his hands
yes.
in his
he
lap.
He does
like,
not want to be there,
right?
Because you got these New Yorkers shouting at each other. You got Nancy Pelosi doing her thing, and Pence is going, "I'm from Indiana. We do not shout at each other like this. I'm very uncomfortable in this situation." Anyway,
I want a safe place.
That's why I wondered if Pence was there today, if he found a reason to.
Not aware.
The meeting.
He may have been. But yesterday, according to the woman who will go unnamed.
NP. Just go NP. I can handle that
NP.
One.
NP.
Okay, NP.
So they come out, the microphone's out in the little driveway there in front of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my goodness, it sounded like it was a love fest yesterday. They both wanted to spend. In fact, Senator Schumer said it was the president who said, let's bump that infrastructure proposal up to $2 trillion. So they're all happy with that. We're all agreement that there's, our roads and bridges and other things, broadband, all that kind of thing. It all needs to be improved. Apparently, they're going to get together in 3 weeks because they have thrown the idea of who's going to pay for this, at least first off, to the president. They said they want to hear from the president how we're going to pay for this $2 trillion infrastructure tap. Who's going to pay for it? Now, here's the thing that's coming out of this. What they want, I believe, from the president is we're going to pay for this by withdrawing some of the tax breaks that he put in place a couple of years ago, particularly for, in true Democratic fashion, for the rich people, the tax break the rich people got.
Right.
The flip side of all of this and or would be a increase in the federal gas tax, all right, to pay for it. Now, there are some Democrats already speaking out saying, we don't want you to do that because a gas tax really hurts lower income people. So I think my projection, what's going to happen in 3 weeks when they get together again, is likely going to be the president is going to say, we'll have to find the revenue somewhere else because I don't think the president is going to go back and withdraw his tax cuts.
No.
Right.
I don't see that's happening.
No.
And I think he's going to be reluctant to add to the federal tax, the gas tax. He already made mention of the fact that how California is suffering because they just raised the gas tax, the state gas tax over
right.
there. I mean, it's up to over $5 a gallon out in California.
In some places, yeah.
In some places in California. But it was really quite interesting yesterday to see the difference in response compared to the first meeting to yesterday.
You know, it used to be that Republicans were fiscal conservatives.
Yes.
And they would say, yeah, I know.
I'm sorry, LOL.
And they would say, listen, $2 trillion, that money's got to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to cut something or you have to raise some taxes.
Yep.
You know, but now Republicans are just as much on the borrowing kick and the printing money kick as the Democrats.
You know, one of the big reasons for that is the American people don't give a rip.
No, they don't.
Huh? It is not sexy to talk about spending cuts and budgeting.
Yes, that's true.
And to tell people no.
But you know what? They're going to say, yes, we want the roads and bridges fixed. So we want the $2 trillion infrastructure plan.
Right.
But we don't want to pay any increase money at the gas pump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just can't have it both ways. And Americans just don't seem to understand that because politicians aren't telling them.
And let me just say this, I'm a little flippant there with my Americans don't give a rip. There are a lot of Americans who do give a rip. But I will say this, the pressure on Congress to, in quote, balance the budget is not there.
Right.
Okay. So
that's fair to say.
That's fair to say. Yeah. So if you're a politician in Washington, be you a Republican or a Democrat, it is really nice. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not for this. I'm just saying it's really nice to not have any pressure coming from people saying, hey, you are spending us into oblivion. We need to find somewhere to cut.
Right.
It's much easier if you're a Republican or a Democrat to say, hey, money is flowing back into the state.
Right.
Flowing back into the district.
How do you like my pork now?
Everybody loves me.
Yeah.
I'm bringing home I'm not bringing home the bacon. I'm bringing home the pig.
Yeah.
and we're all good here because we're building this, that, and the other. And so that's easy to do. It's easy, but it's hard to say, no, we're not going to do this. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III of the Hamilton Corner.
Have you considered that? Every time we refer to the Spirit of God, Apostle Paul is encouraging us to consider that this is a down payment on the fact that there's something coming in the future.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
My story begins with debt, a lot of debt, credit card debt, and I heard a commercial for Trinity. I gave them a call.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
When I first called, I was a little embarrassed and kind of ashamed, and I looked at the numbers and I saw how quickly that astronomical debt that was in my life would go away.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
What I would tell other people, please pick up the phone and call Trinity. Just let them put together a program and see how affordable and easy it is to pay off your debt.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Banning public displays of affection. That story coming up. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. 3 out of 4 people want to ban physical contact at work. That's according to a new survey conducted by Total Jobs. Workers these days are just too confused about what is and what is not appropriate in the workplace. I mean, what's a guy supposed to do when his female boss tries the two-cheek kiss? It's awkward, especially in this age of hashtags. The idea behind the ban on physical contact is to remove the confusion of what kind of touch is appropriate. It's even possible handshakes would be verboten, firm grip, or limp fish. One etiquette expert says such a ban is unlikely, mainly because they'd have to rewrite all the etiquette books. That and the handshake is the standard way of greeting people across the fruited plain. I mean, how else would a salesman seal the deal if he can't do it with a handshake? I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
All right, welcome back to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Ed and Fred, and we were laughing earlier about this. If you go online and just type in Trump, Pelosi, Schumer, and you click on an image of their meeting from a few months back, that's the one we were laughing about. But I don't know if there's an image yesterday from their infrastructure meeting, is there?
Not from inside.
Well, I bet that was interesting, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Huh? I'd like to have been a fly on the wall in
that
meeting.
Sign me up for that.
For the infrastructure meeting?
Mm-hmm.
You get into bridges and, And pavement?
And roads, pavement.
Pavement, things like that?
Absolutely.
I'm digging that. I could listen to that all day long. But that picture from a couple months back, it's maybe when you can Google it, folks, or maybe we can put it on our, if Bryn can find it, we can put it on our Facebook page, but it's, it's just hilarious. It's just a,
you know, it's still about Mike Pence.
It's in the White House, in the Oval. I don't know if it's in the, it's in the Oval Office.
Happy place.
Look.
Happy place.
But Nancy Pelosi's got her hand out like she's sort of, she's the teacher lecturing the student. The student is Donald Trump. Trump is.
Because that was in front of the cameras. That turned hostile in a hurry.
It was hostile. And President Trump's, you know, he's leaning forward like he always does, and he's got his hands out in front of him, and his facial expression is, I'm not going to listen to you, woman.
Right.
Huh? Am I right? That's what it's
animated.
Yes, animated. It was Trump. I'm not going to listen to you.
It broke down in a hurry.
Yeah, and Schumer's looking straight forward, and he's like going, I think he's raising his voice because these New Yorkers Trump and Schumer going at each other, and Vice President Pence is sitting over there looking at President Trump going, I do not want to be here.
You know what he was doing?
Somebody just, please if that was call me out to something important.
Yeah, I'd be going, Little Caesars has those $6 pizzas. When they I got, get out of here.
Right. They got the pizza with the bacon wrapped around it now. I've got to get some of that. But it's just,
as soon as this meeting's over.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, there is the stereotype of people from around the country and how they handle things and how they do things. And, you know, if you're a Midwesterner like an Indiana governor, you're well mannered, right? And you're pretty soft spoken, and that's what Pence is representing. And then you got Schumer and Trump, who from they're New Yorkers, and they you know, they shout at each other in insults, and then they, I guess they go get a beer or something. I don't know what they do, but that's kind of how they live. So this is what what's going on. Anyway, just funny to see the visual of that, and we will see what happens. What you were saying, Fred, real quickly, you were saying that you were saying Pelosi and Schumer came out of the meeting with President Trump yesterday and said it was a good meeting and they got a lot accomplished. Is that what they said?
Oh yeah, it was a very constructive meeting.
Okay, well that's interesting because to prove my point that all these politicians are bipolar, and that is that Pelosi had just released a statement against President Trump, calling him immoral, unethical, corrupt, and unpatriotic.
Yeah.
I think they added a word since last week. But my point. So you're going into a meeting negotiating with the immoral, unethical, corrupt, and unpatriotic man. And then you come outside of the White House and you go, I think we had a good meeting
here.
Very productive meeting with the corrupt, unpatriotic, unethical, and immoral president that we were just able to have. And we thank him for his time today.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we want to work with him.
It's all a game up there. It really is.
Well, I don't know if it's all, but right. a lot of it is show, isn't it?
It is. Yes. It's show.
Yep.
For trying to get... You score points with your side,
yeah,
with your base.
Nancy Pelosi, excuse me, NP, has to call him immoral, unethical, corrupt, and unpatriotic, but she still has to accomplish something. So if she can get a deal done on infrastructure
for her members who can have things sent back home to their districts to pay for highways and bridges. And
yeah,
exactly.
I'm going to have to work with this guy that she thinks is an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and worse, immoral.
Right.
An immoral idiot. Well, I don't know. Has she ever called him an idiot?
No, but she does use a number of I words.
Would you rather be corrupt or be an idiot? Would be my question. If you had to choose between the two characteristics.
Thank you for looking at me.
No, well, I'm just wondering. Is that a moral dilemma? What does the Bible have to say about that? If you have to choose between corruption.
Well, we got another preacher on the show. Let's ask him.
We'll go to that. I think I'd rather be a... Abraham Hamilton III here to discuss this moral dilemma with us.
Yeah, Abe, which one? Corrupt or an idiot?
Corrupt or an idiot?
I reject faulty binary.
I think I'm going idiot.
That's the
attorney. I'd rather be an idiot. I think so.
You're an idiot. You don't even know
you're
corrupt.
If you're corrupt, if you're corrupt, you're intentionally.
But does your ignorance absolve you of corruption?
He's a former prosecuting attorney.
Duly noted.
I would like you to turn your questioning to the man who brought this up. I don't know why I get asked the question and you put me on the stand.
Well, because you roped me into this conversation. Nobody was throwing this my way until you pointed to me.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, we shall move on now. Since mine is evidently a question too hard for these fellas to answer.
Question for Abe.
Yes, question of the week for – maybe we got more than one, but Abe is a constitutional attorney, and he's the host of the Hamilton Corner. Everybody knows that if you listen to AFR in the afternoon. And so we usually have a legal question for Abe.
Well,
do you have one, Fred? I had a legalistic question.
Legal.
But evidently these guys don't want to handle that one.
Right,
so go ahead.
That must have been a tough question. William Barr. For the Senate Judiciary. Have you heard any of the testimony today?
No, I haven't heard the testimony. I saw that Mueller issued a letter.
Well, this came up this morning. I was listening before I came to the studio. Mueller actually wrote that letter some time ago, right after Barr issued the summary.
Yep.
Now, the media has been reporting that Mueller was critical of Barr's assessment of his 400-page report. Uh-huh. Barr says, that is not what the case was. In fact, Barr says he gave his friend Bob Mueller a call after he got the letter, and he says, Mueller said, no, your assessment is right. I don't like what the media is reporting on this.
That's right.
So he dealt with that this morning. But I was just telling the guys, Abe, a few moments ago, I found the Attorney General's comments with regards to the obstruction of justice angle of this. Attorney General William Barr told the Senate Judiciary Committee this morning he was surprised that Mueller had not come to a conclusion one way or the other on obstruction. He came to a conclusion on collusion, no collusion. He thought it rather strange because, and I'm paraphrasing Barr here, because it is the job of a Bob Mueller to make that recommendation. And Bob Mueller did not. He left it up to William Barr and Rod Rosenstein to make that decision.
It is completely abnormal because if you're not going to make a decision, and I would describe it as a charging decision.
Yes.
If you're not going to make a charging decision, why are you appointed as a special prosecutor? I mean, that's your job is to conduct the investigation and make a determination if a crime has occurred. And if one has occurred, to charge, or if a crime has not occurred based on the evidence you procure, to say so. So him concluding, $30 million, three years or so, we'll let the next guy make the decision.
Okay, so that's helping us because we had a discussion earlier and we were pooling our ignorance, frankly. So Bob Mueller could have charged the president. He could have charged the president with a crime.
If he thought he committed a crime.
So who would carry out the process of indictment and all that? That would all go to the attorney general? Or would Mueller be able to do it?
It would be Mueller, just as he was the one that led the indictment of Flynn and others. Now, of course, you have the deferential, it's not a law, but it's a practice to not indict a sitting president. But if he's going to release a report that includes criminality, even if the indictment won't come until after his term ends, you would convey that in the report. I mean, that was his opportunity to do so, just as he was explicit in concluding that there was no criminal offense concerning the collusion delusion. He was supposed to make a similar conclusion on the issue concerning President Trump's obstruction, if there was obstruction.
Okay, so that helps me. So like in the case of Richard Nixon, so we're going back to the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Impeachment of a president, of a sitting president, happens. Some of this will be hypothetical. Mm-hmm. Impeachment, the House brings an impeachment charge, and they basically, and then the Senate hears the case, okay? That is to remove a president from office so then he or she can be charged with a crime.
That's exactly right.
So this is all this discussion here about the House impeaching the president is we're going to impeach him, get him out of office so that Bob Mueller can then charge him with the crimes that he has put forth in this report. That would have been the way it would have played out.
That is the way it would have played out.
That's why we have you on the program.
That's exactly right. That is how it would have played out. He lays out the investigatory evidence for recommending a criminal charge and indictment. Then that information will be conveyed to the House of Representatives. They would say, hey, here's all the evidence. Impeachment hearings will proceed. The Senate would then have to vote to convict on that issue. And once removed from office, he would be subject to criminal liability.
I'm going to ask you to speculate. What would motivate Bob Mueller to do what he did on the obstruction question?
What did he do exactly?
He punted.
Yeah.
He didn't go one way or the other. He just kind of almost teased out there.
Well, if you can't find obstruction after 2 years, you didn't find it. So if you didn't find it, it doesn't. It's bizarre to me to say after 2 years, a subpoena and how many documents having called on all these witnesses, over
500.
Hundreds of people for hours. They interviewed, the Mueller's office and his Clinton lawyers,
right.
Clinton supporting lawyers, interviewed this attorney for the president. What's the gentleman's name? He's
McGahn.
McGahn.
Yeah, Don McGahn.
For like 25 hours.
Yeah.
25 hours they interviewed this guy. And now Nadler wants him to sit down and like he can get more information
right
out of him. This is just harassment. It's complete. I guess what I'm saying is after 2 years and you have the power that Robert Mueller had and he hires a team of lawyers who can't stand Trump. And you go down and shut down his personal attorney, shut him down, his Cohen I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And you can't find anything. There wasn't anything there and there isn't anything there. And obstruction of justice is a far, far reach here. They just need to, the Democrats probably do better to move on. And I think that's what some in their party, including Pelosi.
Yeah, I think saying. You're right. And the facts
Bill,
are.
Bill Maher. Bill
yeah.
Maher.
Yeah.
Who I would list on one of the top five people I most dislike in the world. I can't, because of he's so anti-Christian and such a smart aleck all the time. He even said that it appears he told
Adam Schiff,
the congressman from California, who's got the goods on President Trump. You know, he's had the goods for 2 years now, but he won't show us the goods. He says that it appears that the Democrats, Mars saying this, are stalking.
Yeah, he says you just look like a stalker now.
Yeah, no, because it's true. The decision not to charge from a prosecutor's standpoint is a decision that there was no evidence
right.
to support an obstruction claim. But the open-ended resolution in the report itself by not saying that, it just lays the groundwork for the House of Representatives to continue to do what they're doing.
Well,
but I do think it's going to backfire because you think about this. What other president... let's just say hypothetically, you have 2.5 years to investigate Hillary Clinton. 2.5 years to investigate Barack Obama. You think those people will come up?
No, no, my word. No, no.
Yeah.
No, if you had a special
empty-handed,
counsel.
Empty-handed, you mean?
Yes, come
no,
up
no.
empty-handed.
And you had unlimited, basically unlimited power. You know what I'm saying?
And you hired
10 Republican attorneys to go after Obama or Clinton or anybody. Oh, my word.
Yeah, and so my point in raising that is not the far-out left-wing people who are part of the Democrat base, but independent-thinking people, people who are in the middle, they are going to recognize, wait a minute, they did all of that and they still didn't find nothing in this guy?
Right,
yeah.
He's got to be the cleanest guy?
Yeah,
yeah.
And
how
do you do that?
Biden didn't talk about it the other day, did he, when he announced? Maybe he did. I mean, he's sitting there acting like he's the knight in shining armor to save the day from the evil empire, being led by Darth Vader, Trump.
Darth Trump.
But I don't know that he went into the Mueller collusion.
I didn't listen to his speech.
Anyway, we'll see what happens with that. But I just think it's a losing proposition to continue with this for the Democrats. And I think a lot of Democrats understand that, but it's a few of them can't let it go. They just can't let it go because they're going to get to the bottom of this. But Schiff keeps saying he has overwhelming evidence of collusion. Is that his name, Schiff?
Schiff. I think Adam Schiff, right?
S-H-I-F-F, something like
yes.
that?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's almost like the kind of like a boy in high school who keeps trying to go out with a girl and she keeps saying no. At some point, you just got to let it go. Give it up.
Yeah.
This is not quite the same.
You got to go, Elsa.
Yeah, that's right. You got to let it go. So Adam Schiff, I mean, the president's not going to dance with you,
right?
You know, you're not going to find charges. Just let it go. Move on to something else.
Adam, it's over.
Yes,
it's over, man.
There are plenty of other Republicans out there that you can.
They're not going to let it die though, because this is the 2020 campaign strategy.
Yes,
there are the policy.
Well, that's foolish. If that's
yes, it is.
Well, the strategy is not specific to collusion. It is just continue to keep a cloud of uncertainty around the president so that he can be painted as the Darth Vader.
As I was saying yesterday, we have a guest standing by, but he may be sitting down. I don't know. But anyway, as I was saying yesterday, you gentlemen weren't on the program. Fred was, I think Fred was. The economy is doing really well. The American economy is doing really well.
What, the 1% GDP growth is our new normal?
It's 3, isn't it?
3.2.
President, there's a couple things you can attribute that to. The tax cuts that took place a couple years ago has unleashed a lot of new business in America. And people, it just has. It's undeniable. So the economy's doing, and then the second thing, the deregulation that you can't see that's being done by President Trump's administration, his appointments to agencies that have authority over regulating, they've deregulated a lot. So that's freeing up businesses as well. Anyway, the point is the economy is doing really well. The Democrats don't have that to run on. They don't have a poor economy to pin on Trump to say, if you elect us, the economy is going to be better. They don't have that argument with a straight face. Now, Biden's going to, he tried that deal the other night in Western Pennsylvania where he's trying to tell people they're doing, it's terrible living in America right now, isn't it? And, you know, and so I didn't even hear, there wasn't even a roaring applause for that line, you know. Yeah. So that's not going to work. I say the best thing to do is just go with, I hate Trump. Let that be their campaign slogan.
Yeah.
I hate Trump, who's with me. And see, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That way you just cut to the chase, to your, like you're talking about. We don't pretend like the economy's doing bad. We just say, I hate Trump, who's with me, America. Right. And let that be the campaign theme for the Democrats. And that way we don't have to act like they're obstruction and the economy's
doing bad. No pretending anymore.
Only the 1% get wealthy. Who wants to go vacation to Venezuela? Right. Things of that nature that the Democrats are going to appeal to.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Abe, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. What are you going to talk about this afternoon?
I'm decided. I have a couple things on the table, but I haven't
very few choices out there.
I bet you have some good juicy clips from the
hearing.
Barr, Attorney General Barr, because he handles himself really well.
Yeah, he does. He does. So
all right, thank you.
All righty, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Abe. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed, tomorrow is the National Day of Prayer, the annual National Day of Prayer. And we as a Christian radio network obviously promote prayer to God and God of the Bible.
Right.
To be clear, today's word, you got to tell what God you're talking about. The God of the Bible, and Christians will be gathering around the country tomorrow to pray, right?
Yes, that's right. And we want to welcome to the program Jim Bolthouse, president of the Presidential Prayer Team. And so, Jim, welcome to the program.
Well, it's a great honor to be here.
Well, so tell us a little bit about the National Day of Prayer and what the Presidential Prayer Team is doing. What are you asking people to do tomorrow?
Okay, well, let me give you a bit of history. The National Day of Prayer started with an initiative by Congress back in 1952. It wasn't until Clinton got in office that things got real serious, and there was a bunch of people working hard to make this become a day. But the original request was that the president set aside one day a year for prayer. And Clinton was the first one to appoint it to be Thursday, the first Thursday in May of every year. So that's what has been celebrated every year. And each year it seems to be growing and more involvement throughout the country. It initially started with events in Washington, D.C., and now it's pretty much in every capital of all 50 states and in many churches around the entire country. And it's just a day to set aside to say God is God of our country, and we're going to honor him with this day of prayer, and we're going to pray for each other. And that's what that's about. Now, we came about around 2001 when the Presidential Prayer Team started. We started right after the week after the national, after 9/11, because there was such a need for focus on prayer for our country. We launched the presidential prayer team. It got announced from the garden in the White House, and it just took off. And we've been working at it ever since. We've been in operation every day since that day, September 18th of 2001 to today, 24 hours a day. So we quickly became, at that point, the largest .org website in the world. And because of it, our goal was to grow to about 2.5 million active praying members. We hit that a couple of years later, and we have been continuing to promote prayer from our president on down, following what Paul says to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 2. He says, first of all, where I urge you to make first priority to pray for each other and pray for the kings and the leaders of our country that we can have peace in our land. That's a paraphrased version of that. But that's basically what that verse says, and that's what we use to energize what we do on a daily basis, is to provide specific information from many different angles, from our president on down, of how to pray. And that's what Presidential Prayer Team is. Now, our involvement with the National Day of Prayer is to add the internet or email, and now this year even cell phone connections, so that people that have those means of communication can jump on board and make it happen. This year, I've been told that there's 257 million active smartphones in America, and every one of those smartphones has the ability to tie into the National Day of Prayer tomorrow and be a part of it by logging into their own personal prayer room, where there will be prayer resources, items to be praying about. You'll be able to see other people praying around the country. You'll be able to hear other people praying around the country. And it's a gathering of people to focus on prayer, and encouraging each Christian, each person that has living God in their heart, to turn to God and put our country first.
Well, Jim, we're talking with Jim Bolthouse, president of the Presidential Prayer Team. Jim, that sounds like a really exciting experience, not just an experience, but opportunity for Christians around the country to get involved in a community of prayer, having resources. You mentioned 257 million smartphones in this country. I frankly wish there were 257 million smart people operating those smartphones, but we can at least get some godly folks praying. How do people, where do people go? Because you talk about the fact that they'll have resources, who to pray for, what to pray for, to see who else is praying. Where do people go to get that kind of information, to get signed up, and to get involved?
Well, yeah, we made it very simple. You just have to go to pray.team, pray.team, and that will take you to the home page of our website. Another way to get there is through our normal presidentialprayerteam.org, but that's harder to spell and remember. Just pray.team will take you there. We need you to register so we can set up the prayer room for you for coming back tomorrow and being a part of that.
Jim Bolthouse, president of the Presidential Prayer Team, has been our guest. Jim, thank you for being on the program, but most of all, thank you for all that you guys are doing. Our nation is in desperate need of prayer, and we need all the ground troops we can get. Thanks for being on the program with us, Jim.
Thank you.
Pray.team. That's easy enough to remember, folks.
All right, Fred. Thank you, my friend.
Good to be here, as always.
For your contributions to this here show. We're going to take a five-minute break and then for news, and then provided by Fred's news team there.
Yep.
And then we shall return with Steve Jordahl. So stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.